This is Paul Davey, Yield Point Specialist for Ag Services in Warren, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Randy Conan, along with Tyler Donaldson and Whitney Pittman. Grain markets, futures all closed for the Good Friday Easter holiday, and those markets will reopen again on Monday morning. Next round of snow is moving across the Dakotas today, North Dakota. Bismarck National Weather Service meteorologist Connor Smith says this system is a much smaller one than the one that hit earlier this week.
We currently have a system moving through. It started overnight and brought mostly snow across south central and north central North Dakota, and now it's moving through eastern North Dakota. The highest reports we've seen is 4 inches in central North Dakota. That should continue through most of the day today. And then this weekend, we're looking at another low-pressure system that could move through the Dakotas, but that probably just drops snow south of Interstate 94. That may only be anywhere from a little bit to maybe like 2 inches most.
And temperatures expected to get above freezing next week.
Next week, we might get a little bit of spring here. We'll be back in the 40s and 50s. Wednesday and Thursday look like the warmest in the 50s, and maybe in southern North Dakota could hit 60.
Reaction to Thursday's planting intentions report continues. Martinson Ag Risk Management President Randy Martinson says the grain trade didn't care about the quarterly stocks report.
Market virtually ignored the quarterly grain stocks estimate. You know, they, even though the numbers came in, they were good for corn, they were a little bit negative or troubling for wheat and soybeans, but the market didn't care. They focused on the acres report, and that really is what gave the market the direction. And what was the big surprise, and what's everybody's question is, where did the corn acres go, and where did the principal acres go for crops? Because we saw a over 6 million acre drop from last year's principal acres, and that was a little bit questioning, especially when we're looking at a year where we shouldn't have much prevent plant.
Martinson says the acreage reduction was widespread.
What was interesting is it was just about every single one of the states, except for a few minor producing ag producing states, that saw decreases in their principal acres that are going to be planted this year. So I don't know where those acres are going. That's going to be interesting as we go forward and just see what the June report says. If we find these acres sometime between now and June, but it's going to be interesting to see where they fall.
Napoleon Livestock Exchange co-owner Jim Bitz says cattle markets at sale barns have held steady despite some recent turmoil in the futures.
Any little glitch, they used to affect the market quite a bit. You don't see it. I think that was 2-3 weeks ago on a Thursday, you know, about the time I want to start selling cattle, 9 a.m, the futures open like close to $4 down. You're like, oh my, what's going to happen here? And the cattle actually sold higher than the week before. Last week had a few snow issues, and you worry about that, and cattle sold just as high. This week, you didn't have much of a test. We had a few deals of replacement heifers, but those sold really well. I mean, got guys coming into buying them. We'll have a nicer sale last week, but all in all, I think the demand's very high for these cattle because our numbers are so low.
Bit says feeder markets are competing for replacement heifers, and way-up cattle are selling at historic prices.
The cow and bull market, the way-up cow and bull market is just phenomenal. You know, I've never seen anything that high, and my dad, who's been, you know, auctioneering cattle since the 60s, he says too this is the highest he's ever seen cattle. A lot of guys, when they looked at what they can get dollars per head for their 700-800 pound heifer, you know, decided, hey, I'm going to sell more heifers this year, pay down my bank note, and you know, build up slowly. So I think when you start seeing like our last cattle on feed report, the placements were high. Well, yeah, we didn't move a lot of cattle in January, we moved a lot of cattle in February, and a lot, you know, there were a few more heifers sold.
China has begun a World Trade Organization dispute with the United States over the use of tax credits to promote the production of electric vehicles and renewable energy projects. China claims those tax credits created under the Inflation Reduction Act discriminate against products produced in China.
USDA's dairy margin coverage triggers a payment for participating farmers when the difference between the all milk price and the average feed price falls below a certain level. DMC was triggered in 11 of the 12 months in 2023. Associated Milk Producers Incorporated Vice President of Marketing Sarah Schmidt says the risk management program was working as intended.
That said, the calculation for that program uses a national milk price. Here in the Midwest, because the vast majority of our milk goes to cheese, and cheese is the low market price right now, our average milk price in the Midwest is not close to the national average milk price. So in the safety net program that uses a national average for us to be much lower, our dairy farmers are telling us DMC isn't providing the support that they had typically come to expect.
DMC payments kick in when margins are at $9.50 per hundredweight or less. Due to increased costs, Schmidt says that margin should increase to $10 per hundredweight.
And the other thing we're talking about is when DMC was created, it was at a mark that made the coverage affordable for about 200, 250 cow herds, so to produce 5 million pounds of milk per year or less. That's not the average herd size anymore. The average herd size is closer to that 350 mark. So we'd like to see that annual production threshold grow just a bit.
AMPI would like to see changes to the DMC program when the new farm bill is completed. Schmidt remains hopeful that a new farm bill will pass this year, but her optimism is cooling with it being an election year. Follow along with us on social media. Find the Red River Farm Network on X and Facebook. Podcasts and more are available on our website, rrfn.com. Reporting agriculture's business, this is the Red River Farm Network.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. The Minnesota legislative session is at its halfway point. The topic of nitrates in groundwater, especially in southeastern Minnesota, has dominated the conversation in the Agriculture and Environment Committees. Minnesota Farm Bureau Public Policy Director Pierce Bennett emphasizes farmers have taken steps to reduce the risk, including cover crops and conservation tillage.
The best way to help continue strengthening those on-farm practices is through voluntary programming that incentivizes and helps farmers gain access to the tools they need, whether it's for the previously mentioned practices or other new options available to them. We don't believe a one-size-fits-all regulatory framework is going to be as helpful as a flexible voluntary framework.
The nitrate debate has been focused on an 8 to 10 county area in southeastern Minnesota, but there is always the potential to expand statewide. With the DFL trifecta, last year's legislative session was one of the busiest in recent memory. Bennett says the pace is different this year.
There's quite a bit of a methodical pace, I think is the right term. Folks certainly still have a lot of productive and helpful ideas on a variety of topics, and we're seeing a lot of bills be dropped. There is no doubt about that. There's no shortage of ideas. However, I think we are being pretty thoughtful through this session.
Minnesota House Ag Committee Ranking Member Paul Anderson says this year, some key legislation impacting agriculture is actually moving through the Environment Committee this session.
There's a bill that was heard in committee to discuss what happens when you have over a 10,000 animal unit at the feedlot, and the bill would mandate doing a very expensive environmental impact statement, and that really would make it difficult for any feedlots of that size to be proposed and built in Minnesota. So there's some concern about if that bill is going to move on or not. Also a ban on growing corn on state-owned land in the state of Minnesota.
Water quality also a main concern for supporters.
The folks that don't like corn, don't like what it does to water, such as nitrates in the water, things like that. They want to see a ban put on corn on DNR acres in the state. And the concern with that would be that already a lot of deer are doing depredation damage on crops. And if we don't have corn growing on some of these food plot areas, it could really impact what's going to happen on privately owned acres and additional deprivation on corn acres. So things like that going on as we work through the session. And again, not really a budget year, but mainly policy items here in Minnesota.
Morton, North Dakota farmer Mike Langseth says last fall their operation implemented a practice that uses an older corn head to improve seeding in no-till soybeans.
We were looking for an older style corn head. In this case, it's specifically a John Deere 90 series with the old style fluted snapping rollers. So now our fields, you know, have the corn stalk standing somewhere between, you know, belt and chest high. And it looks like 1998 out there. It's great. what we're hoping to get out of it is one, a little less maintenance on the corn head. And another thing is ease of planting. We've got a pretty good no-till drill, but the less residue that's laying on the ground, the less that those discs have to cut through and fight with.
Langseth says this may have other benefits as well.
There's a lot of cattle in the area, and you know, some of our neighbors got a chance to graze a bunch of our corn stalks last fall, and they were really happy about it because, again, you know, if the cows don't have to pick those leaves off the ground, they're quite a bit happier. It's really good for erosion, taller, breaks the wind more. We didn't have a serious erosion problem before because we had a, you know, we were still no-till full residue corn. But as far as trapping snow, especially in a dry winter, you know, the taller they're standing up, the more snow that's going to catch.
USDA is investigating up to $22 million to expand technical assistance for livestock producers to adopt conservation practices on grazing land. The NRCS will accept proposals for the Grazing Lands Conservation Initiative until May 26th. The partnerships should expand the footprint of conservation on grazing land and help reach undeserved producers. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Let's catch up with Ag Week reporter Ariana Schumacher. Ariana, what do you have for us on the cover of Ag Week?
This week we're going to be talking about dairy and beef-crossed cattle and kind of their move into the industry now that we're starting to see more of them entering the livestock market.
What's driving the interest?
And secondary income from dairy producers is a big push for this dairy on beef, as well as it's contributing to beef marbling and just better meat quality overall.
So it's a little more than just feeding out the steers then?
Yeah, so saving them, they're crossing them, so you'll see a lot of Holstein Angus crosses, starting to see some Jersey crosses getting in there as well, so kind of bringing out the best of both the genetics when it comes to the beef and the dairy meat. I just know that with the Holsteins, the meat marbling is a lot better quality than what you're seeing with just that Angus or just that beef animal.
Who are you talking with?
We've got some researchers out of the University of Kansas and the University of Oklahoma. They came and spoke at the I-29 Moo University here in Sioux Falls. So got to catch up with them, watch some of their presentations, and bring their information into the story.
It's new, so it's a growing market then.
It is a growing market. We've seen it grow over the past 5 to 6 years. And by the end of 2026, they're hoping that we'll be seeing 5 to 6 million of those beef dairy crosses entering the market. So that'll make up about 15% of that beef market.
Well, sounds interesting. Looking forward to reading about it next week's Ag Week.
Easter is dominating the featuring for supermarkets. The food industry analytical firm Earnerberry says pork has the largest share of protein ad space. Holiday ham dominated the pork category, with bone-in hams often featured as a loss leader. Beef represents 20% of retail activity, and chicken features make up 11% of ad space. Easter is also bringing more lamb to the table, with those retail opportunities increasing to 4% this week.
John Deere is laying off more than 300 employees at its Waterloo operations. These layoffs take effect at the end of April, and in a statement, Deere officials said that each factory balances the size of its production workforce with the needs of each individual factory. Reporting Agriculture's Business, you're listening to the Red River Farm Network.